We are ready? Are we recording? Excellent. Good morning, everyone. I am Commissioner Debbie McDowell, President of Minnesota League of Cities, and I do call this special meeting, it's a regular meeting? Regular meeting, to order. It is now 9:38, so we'll go ahead, we do have a quorum, but we'll go ahead and make the introductions, starting at my left.
Debbie Sketchnochi, City of Brayton Beach.
Lisa Gonzalez-Moore, City of Brayton.
Commissioner Debbie McDowell from the amazing city of Northport.
BJ Bishop, Commissioner, Longboat Key.
Jen Ahern-Koch, Vice Mayor, City of Sarasota.
So we are all here, thank you very much, and if I could please have my, my Vice President lead us in the pledge, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right. Do I read this pledge of public conduct when there's no public?
No.
Okay.
And since it's all women here, we won't have a problem.
This is an odd agenda.
Oh.
It's your agenda.
That was the town commission. So here, we'll put this between.
Thank you very much. I just saw agenda, grabbed it. So, sorry for starting it late. My car broke down in the city of Sarasota when I was picking up Commissioner Ahern-Koch. So my apologies for starting this late and not being very prepared. So we will go ahead and do the president's report. Oh, sorry. Approval of the minutes first from September 12th.
I move approval.
Second.
Excellent. So we have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Chair votes aye. All righty. So now we will move on to the president's report. I'm going to take a moment here to just extend. I don't even know what the words are. My sympathies to my neighboring cities to the north, going through Hurricane Helene, going through Hurricane Milton, the devastation that I saw on the TV, the devastation I saw for your recovery efforts, and the recovery efforts I've been watching for all of these sister cities. I know firsthand what y'all are going through. I know firsthand what your citizens are going through. And it breaks my heart that this has happened again, just a different area. And I just want it to be known that I have been praying for all of you. I hope you have felt the love. And I know you guys are all going to come back bigger, better, and stronger. And hang in there. Seriously, just hang in there.
Thank you.
So this is also my last meeting. I term out of office. My last day as a commissioner will be when we swear in the new commissioners, which I think is Saturday the 16th, something like that. I'm waiting for that agenda to post. We do ours on a Saturday, that way then families and friends can come and do well wishes and stuff. So this is my last meeting. I have been honored to be part of this board. I have been honored to meet all of you. You guys are really, really special to me. I'm going to miss it. I'm going to miss it horribly. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you to each one of you. Gail, Stephanie, she was here, but she left.
Steph's right there.
No, the other lady.
Savannah was here?
Savannah.
Oh, Trish.
Trish, yes, she walked in and walked back out. So thank you very much for helping us with Minnesota League of Cities. You guys have been a great inspiration, and thank you. So not much going on in the city. Between Milton, we have recovery. We're picking up, it seems silly to say, we're picking up yard debris. We're doing it in-house, so that way then the resources can be spread to those that need it more. And we are going through FEMA with that. Thankfully, Sorry, our city was spared this time, which I'm very grateful for. But at the same time, I know that when I am grateful that our city is spared, that means some other city is going through hell. And again, my sympathies for all of you. So I am going to yield. I really don't have anything to report because we really haven't done very much within our city. Some of the things that we have done, I will just reserve those comments to keep them to myself. And we will chat about those offline. So at this point, I will turn it over to the Vice President.
Thank you. Not only have I loved serving with you as a fabulous representative of the city of Northport, we have become good friends, and I can't imagine that I'm going to be in D.C. in February and you're not going to be there.
I'm not even going to be at the Florida League of Conference meeting, conferences in December.
But thank you for a tremendous job, and thank you for your friendship.
Thank you, PJ.
So obviously we have certainly, so, you know, isn't it ironic that of all of us here, Debbie went through the nightmare 2 years ago, and now the four of us have all suffered, not personally, and our communities as well. And I think as a league, this is a great opportunity for us to be sharing information as it shakes out. There is so much about this. Longboat Key has not been hit by a serious hurricane and had serious damage like this in over 100 years. Wow. And 100 years ago, there wasn't a whole hell of a lot out here. So it has been a dramatic experience, and a lot of what we're doing, I mean, we are learning as we run. I can tell you that one of the most tremendous gifts we got was our staff. Stephanie with Trish and Savannah answered phones in their homes. We couldn't even get on the island after Helene for 5 days. Because you couldn't have driven down GMD. It was 5 feet deep in sand. And they have kept the community involved, our town manager and our public works director and our EOC, who's our fire chief, Paul Desi, worked 24/7 for the first 2 weeks after Helene, and about the time we were starting to see, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel, Milton came, and so we turned it right around and dealt with the wind damage, which, thank goodness, was not as significant as the flooding, but still caused even more damage on the island. We have 2,200 properties, either ground floor condos or single family homes, that are severely damaged. And one of the challenges for me, and we're in one of those homes that was severely damaged, is it was a one-story house on the ground, 2 feet over sea level. And ooh, every home in my neighborhood, there's 61 houses, and all of the houses that were on the ground had significant flooding like we did. And some of those people are choosing to repair on the ground, which I believe very strongly means they're going to get to do this all again in a short period of time, because we have seen dramatic changes in the flooding in our neighborhoods, even with just king tides and some significant storms. So FEMA has a program, it has to be administered by our towns, that provide grant opportunities for individuals who will raise their homes. One of the challenges with it is we have to compete with other communities, so it's not a short-term project where people who want to get their houses up off the ground can apply to FEMA and FEMA lets loose with the money. But it worked very successfully in Jacksonville and also St. Augustine several years ago when they had significant flood damage. And we've asked our grants administrator to look into that. And as we get more information and find out what the competitive process is, we will share that with all of you, because I think that's going to be important with how we move forward, not just from this storm, but with storms in the future. We have been very pleased with FDOT making trucks and people available to deal with GMD, and also north of us with Anna Maria, that they have also been doing that. We have had police in here from 5 different jurisdictions every 2 weeks. And the one thing that was really nice, we had folks in from Miami and Miami Beach, and they said, wow, it's so nice to be in a community where everybody is nice to the police. So I, of course, then started handing out cards and said, so when you get tired of working over there, I'm sure we'll have opportunities available. So if you want to look into recruiting for your police department, just have a big storm and start hauling people in. I think there's a lot more that we probably want to download and deal with after the meeting, because our lunch reservations at noon. oh, by the way, the place that recovered very quickly, but they offered us all 20% off their rooms for the rest of October if we wanted to stay there. And you would think, wow, nice, until you realize that the base room is $1,200. So with that, I will turn it back to our president.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Sad to hear about your house.
Thank you.
But now you get to rebuild it and build it for what you want to.
We hope it is. As Lisa was saying, it comes down to a matter of cost, what it's going to cost for us to get off the ground.
Wow. All righty. So what do we...
Just a quick follow-up question.
Sure.
But I think it's relevant to community.
Absolutely. And I,
are you finding that people are thinking about just demolishing and going up, or are you finding that people are contemplating that whole raising the existing structure?
We have had some discussions with raising the existing structure, but one of the problems is most of ours are on slabs, and the complexity mm-hmm. of raising off a slab, and especially if it's a cinder block structure, which most of them are, mm-hmm. The odds are pretty narrow, and the opportunity for it to fail is like a 60-40. We had looked into it because I had talked to someone in the village who has someone who is going to raise their existing structure, but they had a crawl space. So that was the first part of it. The thing that amazes me is the number of people that aren't even contemplating going up. They're just patching and repairing what is there on the ground. And these are people that have 3 to 5 feet of water in their house.
Wow. That's crazy.
Is this an appropriate time to continue this thread of conversation, or do you want to weigh into another part of it?
Let's get through the agenda, and then when we have members' comments, then I'm sure it will be continued.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Gale, how are we going to handle Treasury report?
We're going to guess, because we haven't heard from Brian.
Oh, I'm sure that he's, yeah.
Okay. I think he did suffer personal losses.
I'm sure a lot of this stuff on this agenda is going to be postponed to future meetings because of the hurricane, and everybody's still in recovery mode. And for anybody that's listening, you know, recovery mode from a hurricane, we're post 30 days. Why aren't you guys recovered? You're starting to hear this from your constituents, I guarantee you. Recovery from a hurricane, it takes much longer than just 30 days. And the only way that people would understand it is when they see the damage, they hear the stories, and experience it themselves firsthand. So I sympathize for Member Williams. I hope everything is okay with him and his family and stuff.
You know what may be an interesting thing to do. Holly Smith was here last Friday, and came by to visit with me and also spent some time with our mayor. But Holly is more than, actually, she's eager to come share the stories of the Sanibel recovery, and 2.5 years out, they're still mm-hmm. in recovery mode. And it may be very useful to have Holly come up and kind of talk to us about the long-term process, because all of us are going to be dealing with long-term impacts from this storm for some time.
Absolutely. Maybe we can put that as a future agenda item.
Yeah.
Maybe January or March.
Yeah, I will see her tomorrow, so.
Excellent. Hopefully she'll be able to do that. Great idea. All right, so we're going to skip the report for the FLC District 10. Administrative report, Ms. Gale.
Well, first of all, with Commissioner Williams, his house did have a lot of damage, and he's had some other issues, like with health and so forth, so he hasn't always been here because of those reasons, and I guess other personal reasons, maybe, but I know that he is kind of indicating he would like to pass along the treasurer's position. It is a lot of work doing that. I mean, I know he just sends out the from Edward Jones where the money's saved there, and so that's why we're a little late on doing things. I didn't know he wasn't coming today. I thought he was, but he didn't make it. So with my report, other than that, just said it's been a busy few months because we've had the candidate forum, which mm-hmm. I'll tell you, talked about in a little bit. 3 severe weather interferences with our lives. And get that over. And I did want to just share some other things with you that you may or may not know. Administrator coordinators, or what most of the executive directors, they're called, that organize and take care of the other leagues around that we have the breakfast with a lot. They're called executive directors. And they have, though, lots of members, because around Tampa Bay, Orlando area, Daytona area, all that middle of the state, city, St. Petersburg, they have a lot. And so they do things a lot differently than we do. Like, they have their meetings in restaurants somewhere, you know, and they have parties. And but they have a lot more money than we would, because they have some more many members, you know, in of those areas. But I want to let you all know that we do have once a month the directors or administrative coordinators, whatever everybody calls theirs, we do have a meeting once a month with Florida League of Cities, and they go over, you know, like Allison Payne and so forth, but they do go over a lot of things that other leagues are doing and what they'd let us, like for us to do and so forth. And I do share that with you all, and it has a lot of information in it. So that would continue, hopefully, for whoever's going to be here next. The forum, the candidate forum, I think it went well as far as the candidates. They all showed up, just except for one, I think. And I learned a lot about them. I thought that was very good, talking about themselves, and got to see them face to face. Our audience participation wasn't very large. However, you know, we had it. That's our first one, and you know, we'll do better next time, maybe. But that was a good thing, I thought, to do. A very good thing. And it all went smoothly. Scott was wonderful. And he won't be there much longer, unfortunately, at the League of Cities. He'll be missed a lot. But he drove all the way over from Tallahassee that day to do our meeting or forum. He did drive all the way there, and then he went all the way back, drove all the way back the same day. So that was just, some of you had lunch with him, so that was that was very kind of him to come. And I suggested we could pay him something to come, and he said, no, league covers it. So that was good. Let's see. Well, and then I did have put on the end that a lot of you probably know by now that I was planning on retiring from doing this job that I've done almost 10 years here now. And in the city of Sarasota, I did it for about 16 years. So I figure it's time for somebody else to come in and maybe have other ideas and, you know, you can just something different, put it that way. So I retired from city of Sarasota in 2015, and it was right after that, if you saw some of my information I put out there. Wasn't planning to come back to work, but I was on my way to Tennessee with my son, because I just retired from city of Sarasota like 2 days earlier, and I got a call from Trish saying, would I be interested in working here and part-time? So I said, well, you know, I came in and I talked to human resources and I talked to Trish, and it didn't start out that I was going to be doing the job I'm doing now. But since I'd already been doing it in Sarasota for a lot of years, you know. So I came in and talked to him, and I said, well, yeah, I'll do it, you know, part-time or something like that. So we did work it out. So I would come in and coordinate the league. At first I wasn't. Trish was doing it. And then she came in one time. She said, she's so kind. She said, I believe in people that do most of the work should be, you know, offered another position, you know, higher position to do the work. So that's what I've been doing now for almost 10 years here, 9 and a half. So I think it's time I might really retire this time. I don't know, just do some things like work at food banks or, you know, help people do something. I don't know. Just figure out something. My daughter runs a boarding for animals, dogs, and it's out in Myakka. So I'm going to help her with the pups, which she's pretty good at getting clients. She owns 4 Great Danes herself and all kinds of critters. All kinds of critters. So I might go out and help her once in a while. So anyway, but it's really been great working with everybody, and I'm going to stay here through the January meeting, and, you know, you all will talk about who to replace me with, and so that will, so if you need any more information about, I think I sent out something about the position and all it does, you know, if you don't have it, I can send it out again, but so we'll let somebody new take over, more enthusiastic maybe, and will be enthusiastic and really do a good job. So,
well, thank you, Ms. Gale. Thank you for your service to the league, to Minnesota, helping Longbow Key, coming out of retirement.
I know.
I'm not sure 48 hours is called retirement.
Yeah, exactly.
It was about 48 hours. She called me on the phone. I said, well, I'm on my way to Tennessee, but I'll call you when I get back home.
So, do you have any indication how long the league and the board has to move on finding a replacement? When is your plans for your second retirement? Do you have an idea yet?
No.
Okay.
Well, I'm planning to retire probably in January and help, you know, if somebody else has been chosen, help with that. And, you know, I'm open to helping or have a learning experience or whatever you need, you know.
So as the president, we have to figure out what we're going to do, not to replace you because you are irreplaceable, but to have somebody fulfill your role and responsibilities. And I think this is a board, obviously a board's decision. I've never been through it. I don't think anybody sitting up here has been through it. So I think we would probably have to, are you going to be here for the January 9th
yes,
meeting?
Mm-hmm. I'll be here.
All right. So
anybody
have some ideas and suggestions on how to do this?
When this first came up, Trish called me to let me know that Gail was contemplating retirement again. Mm-hmm. I have talked with Allison. I have talked to Jeannie also at the Florida League of Cities. And I think we have several decisions to make. One of the challenges for Longboat Key has been this position has had office space here, and we are somewhat challenged office space-wise, and that may be an issue coming down the pike. The other opportunity that's out there, a number of the smaller LIGs in our region work through executive directors who manage several LIGs, so they know what's going on with the Florida League of Cities, and they do that remotely. And that means that they can handle both the financing and the budget, as well as administering what's going on for us. So I think under new business, we need to discuss how we see this moving forward, and then discuss how we, because I think it's going to take a separate meeting probably of the four of us who remain on how we're going to achieve finding our next executive director, administrative coordinator, or LIG coordinator who would work remotely, and see which of those is going to be the most appropriate solution.
Sounds like a good idea. Any other ideas or suggestions? Please go ahead, Ms.
So the space that they occupy here, do they lease it? Is it a special, is it a separate?
No, we, you know, like most things we do in Longboat, we just give it away. You know, they don't pay the commission. We make space available for people. We do, thank God, pay Gail. And that's the other thing that we have always done, is that financial arrangement has worked so that it comes through the league reimburses mm-hmm. us, but we handle the personnel side of it okay. in-house.
And the conversation is that you're not sure if the city of Longboat is going to continue.
Well, I'm not sure it's going to be that space may be available. We keep kind of cramming people into smaller and smaller spaces, and at some point there's just no more room here.
Gotcha.
Well, I might say some. A lot of the executive directors are the ones that are at the breakfast meetings and so forth. They do work remotely. Like one of them works under Stetson University, and she's kind of like me here. I get paid by Longboat Key, but Minnesota League reimburses, and that is what she does as well. Besides Stetson, I think somewhere over in Daytona area, she used to coordinate those leagues, same thing. I'm not sure about the other leagues with Angela Christ. She, her leagues are huge. I mean, they have, instead of meetings like us, we're probably one of the only ones that maybe that do it, because the others go out, like I said, at restaurants and have their meetings, and they have big events for them, and but they have a lot more cities than we have too, so they can afford that, you know. But some of them, they do work remotely, and one girl that I usually work with, she has two different leagues that she does, one in Volusia County and one, I think, over Pinellas County, I believe. And she travels, and what they do with her is kind of like we do. They pay. I have got it from her to see what they do exactly. So she works remotely, plans everything remotely, and then get paid through Stetson. And I'm not sure about the other woman that is with the leagues a long time. What's her name? Angela Christ. She's been there a long time. She works out of, I believe it used to be in the university there in Tampa. I'm not sure what she does now with that, if she still does. I think she's still the University of the one in Tampa. I can't think of the name of it right now. But anyway, so that's what they do. So they get paid Sort of like I do. They get paid separately and from each league contributes. That's another thing. Each league here, each city, they it's $500 to join the league, and it's $250 for anybody we get that's like Waste Pro, so forth like that, associate members. We do get a stipend from Florida League of Cities. I think it's every month, which is usually a pretty good amount of money. And so they all are different. And one of the women I'm talking to, Karen Allen, she said she would come to our meetings if you wanted and tell, you know, talk to you about what they do. So if you want to do that, we can schedule it maybe down the road somewhere, or not wait till January, or whatever you like.
I think we need to do it sooner than later, and I think we're going to have to set a separate meeting that works for the four of us a bit, because we don't want you to feel like you still have to be here in June. If
we probably I pulled up the calendar, and I don't know if you. We're coming up on Thanksgiving, and then quickly following that is Christmas, obviously. So I was wondering if maybe the 5th or the 12th of December, it's a Thursday. Mm-hmm. Thursdays seem to be good days. I don't know with the holidays if you guys, I know with our city we have one commission meeting, but we cram a lot of stuff into that commission meeting. So I don't know if the 5th or the 12th would work. It is
5th, we're going to be in Orlando.
We got that Orlando conference, that's right. So we're back to the 12th.
Both I'm okay with.
So, and two, by then you'll have possibly new members that might be able to, you know, help with this decision making, because my replacement will be sworn in. Maybe by then people's lives will be able to calm down and be looking for that normalcy. So.
And will your replacement be the representative on the league, or do you do that later?
That I do not know. I don't know exactly when they're going to do that. I don't know when they're going to do that.
Okay.
So yeah, usually
we normally do all of that at our.
You're swearing in your statutory meeting? We don't do that. We do that later.
No. We do our swearing in, and then I think it's that very next meeting is when we do our committee assignments. So.
And when is your swearing in?
The 12th.
Of December?
Or 16th, no, of November.
Of November, okay.
Yeah. So November 16th.
So there is a possibility that they would have.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and they would, of course, inform Ms. Gale. But I really think that we need to do something sooner rather than later, because I don't want to take advantage of Ms. Gale's kindness to stay on. But like you said, I'm sure she doesn't want to stay until June. So we need to move
probably not
out of respect for her so that she can do what she really wants. And I do appreciate you staying on to get us through this, especially because of the hurricanes. So thank you for that kindness and grace.
What does everybody's calendars look like for December 12th?
I'm okay.
Steph, can you look at our calendar and be sure the chamber, actually, we could we meet in the antechamber? Or do we have to be, we don't televise, we just record, right?
Excuse me, I was looking for what you're looking for.
We just record, we don't televise. Do we have the potential to, okay. Well, I have the town calendar.
But we Zoom, right?
No, do we Zoom? We don't Zoom this. No.
I thought we did Zoom this.
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, why don't we set December 12th at 9:30?
Here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that will be for executive director discussion.
And maybe we can have somebody from Florida League to be able to, that's one of those directors, I think you used the name Angela Crisp. Is she the one that offered to come and speak?
I talked to Angela about it. No, it's...
It was a different name?
Yes.
Okay. Maybe she may be available to speak. If not, maybe somebody from Florida League can send a representative to help us with this transition.
I will talk to Allison tomorrow, because I'll see her tomorrow as well and see if she's available to walk us through this.
Excellent.
And I don't know if Karen will be at the meetings you're going to or not, but I can ask her. Karen?
I'm going to the FLC legislative meetings tomorrow. Is there anybody, maybe I can bend their ear up there to, do you have any names that I can seek out?
Well, Allison is the most critical person, because she's the one that coordinates all the leagues.
Okay, so I'll see if I can chat with Allison.
Yeah.
Well, then I won't.
Or you can, then you can, it's entirely up to you. At this point, I was just offering, I didn't know you would be going to the session tomorrow, so...
Yeah, but here's your relief, I'm not driving.
I may not be driving either.
Yeah, seriously.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to rent a car.
Okay.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm not going to miss that, so... But I didn't know for sure you were going and you were going to... Okay, fantastic, I'll let you handle it.
Ed Petty's driving me.
And it would be better for somebody that's going to be here to bend the ear and have those conversations, because I would just be like relaying information. You're getting it firsthand and asking the questions that you feel are going to be most pertinent to help with this transition. So fantastic.
Which, I did put out there, got on my, I don't have it with me right here, but the duties that this administrative coordinator does. I don't know about the other ones that much, but we did put it together so you can see that. I can send it to you.
Gail, I think you need to send that to all of us again. Because all of that was coming to me as we were clearing out the house between the two hurricanes.
We'll send that to you again.
Okay.
Thank you. Is there any other questions or comments or suggestions, discussion?
I just want to comment on the forum, if that's okay.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think that's the next item under old business.
Okay, I'll wait.
Thank you. Ms. Gail, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
I really do appreciate everything you have done. Thank you.
Thank you.
And good luck to your new retirement. Alrighty.
But Gail, let me tell you one other interesting fact. My husband retired 7 times, and I finally said, no is a complete answer.
I might get bored too, but we'll see.
Alrighty, so old business, the Minnesota League Candidate Forum. We held that in September. I'm just going to kick it off and say that for our first candidate forum, absolute success. Kudos to Stephanie and Gail and Trish for all their hard work in putting that together. I thought the location was very well received. It was more central. The food was a little bit over the top as far as quantity-wise, but I can tell you the cookies that I took to the Boys and Girls Club off of, oh, I don't know which one it was, but they were so grateful. I sent all of the candidates that did participate, and Scott for being our facilitator, I did send them a thank you note probably a few days afterwards. I thought that that was like something that should have been done, because this was our first time and I want them to come back if they're going to be candidates again, and just recognize that we did appreciate that. I think maybe if we did this again, my only constructive small criticism, and this is not even criticism, it's just a learning curve for this, is we need to start planning sooner and we need to advertise better. I think that this was a great first learning step, and it was extremely beneficial because I too learned a lot about the candidates. And that's what it's all about. And maybe getting the media involved and advertising it through the media, through their calendars, through city calendars, different ways of advertising it, but definitely starting earlier. So thank you to everybody. It was successful, and Scott did a tremendous job. And I do believe Member Aaron Koch, you did have some comments. I'll let you go first. Thank you for waiting.
Well, thank you. I agree with everything that you said. I mean, I thought it was for a first time event. It was really, really well done. In addition to us having the opportunity to hear from the candidates, we also had the opportunity to educate them on what issues and how Tallahassee interacts with municipalities. That was the biggest piece for me that I felt was our opportunity to ask them very specific questions about the preemptions, about what Tallahassee is doing. They all come from their own different angles into this role. They all have their own different backgrounds, but I think none of them really truly understood from our level the frustration and the struggles that we have as municipalities being preempted by the state. And I thought that was a good opportunity for us to educate them. A lot of the questions when I said, do you know about this? Do you know about that? Nope. So they have a lot of things they have to learn. Learning curve is huge, as we all know, when you run for office. And it was our opportunity to educate them and hold them accountable to our, you know, our issues. And two of the candidates there was one or the other. So it was a direct conversation with one of the two of them was going to get elected. So that was a really good opportunity, I think, for cities. So from my perspective, I thought, you know, it was a bit of a two-way street. We learned about them. They got to learn about us. And so, you know, next year, I would say, yeah, let's get it out there. Let's get it organized. Let's get it planned. The attendance from their part, I thought, was excellent.
Yeah.
And I was really, really taken aback by how many candidates there were there. So it was the first shot, and next year we'll do it, you know, have more attendance from the public. But it was really well done. Thank you for all the hard work.
Fantastic. Go ahead.
There were a couple issues, and number one was it was much too short a time frame to pull it together, which was why one of the many reasons none of the incumbents came, because they tend not to come to anything, but they have challengers. The other thing that I heard is, in terms of public participation, an afternoon event is not a great time. I mean, those of us here on Longboat Key, probably it would have been fine, but for the greater community, an evening event, and because people, we've understood that people out there actually work for a living. so I would strongly urge that we think about scheduling an evening event, much more time. A lot of the calling and emailing ended up first at my lap, and thank God Stephanie and Savannah and Trish stepped up to take that on, but it was it did leave us scrambling, trying to pull something together that I had neither scheduled time-wise or location-wise, so it was a bit of a pull on our schedules, but without Steph, it wouldn't have happened.
So evening event, what about a lunch event?
That might be possible. I mean, we do pretty well with Tiger Bay. I think
I'm thinking that's yeah. What was my model.
But I really think that by our March meeting next year, we need to have everything in place for this, and all we're waiting for is to see who wins their primaries, if there are primaries.
Next year,
Yeah.
For 26 or 26?
26, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree.
I think having the date set, the location set, we can do that behind the scenes so that when you see that there's a candidate that filed their paperwork, immediately send them a letter so they get it on their calendar. This is the date, we would love for you to come and go from there. Having that information available right away, I think would be very helpful. And I think March is a great target.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe like January's meeting, you're going to be talking about it and finalizing everything for March, and then, because one, most candidates have already filed their paperwork by March of that election year.
Yeah.
Okay. So, great idea. Anybody else? Any other discussion on this topic? Any other ideas, feedback, suggestions?
I think if you want the public to be more involved, it would need to be evening, because it goes back to, a lunch hour is just an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really not enough time if you want to get any in-depth conversation. And if you have multiple candidates, I really think that's...
Yeah, plus travel time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think we have to think about the ideal target for attendance, right? Is it public? Is it local elected officials, municipally elected officials? Is it, you know, like, what's the target audience?
Mm-hmm.
And so, because I think those are different audiences.
Absolutely.
And not one exclusive of the other, but, you know, just to sort of think about it, maybe break up the meeting in those, with those thoughts in mind.
Do we, would it be too labor, probably, as I'm even saying it, too labor intensive to consider having a series so that we could do location versus municipal versus all the way, you know what I mean? Like, to the extent that we're...
Yep, municipal really wouldn't apply for us because we are a league of cities and, yeah, like having one just for the city of Bradenton, or quite honestly for Longboat Key, we're going to have our first contested election though this March.
I was even thinking from, even from the state rep perspective, do we want to, would it be beneficial to kind of not have it be one dump and everybody has to travel?
Well, you know...
Yeah, I think that's worth a discussion down the pike, because that is an interesting point. I think our real challenge is finding a way to engage and get participation from the incumbents.
Yes.
Because the incumbents clearly have not heard nearly enough about home rule.
Mm-hmm.
And that opportunity, and quite honestly, the pull for candidates is the public that are there, that they have yet another opportunity and avenue to see a large number of voters. And from our perspective, it's a great opportunity for us to educate and get our issues out in front of them. So it is kind of a twofold operation, and maybe we split it in terms of, we're going to hear from the public, we're going to hear from elected officials so that they know what they can expect.
One of the things you prompted an idea of, I understand if you were to have different delegations and do it for each one, there is a drawback because these are new people. And this is introducing them to potentially future colleagues. So they already have that, oh, I remember you from that forum. So they're already establishing those connections with each other. So that could become an invaluable tool for them too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm just throwing that out there for something to consider, because I saw many of them afterwards talking and getting to know each other before and afterwards. So, you know, just...
Is that a selling point to the incumbents? I'm on the canvassing board for Manatee County.
You made it.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So that's why I have to be very careful, and that's also why I ultimately decided not to attend. But that said, I I have a sense that the incumbents are really not motivated to, I mean, my personal experience when running, and I know it's a municipal race, was kind of joking of, I never turned down a mic. Mm-hmm. I went anywhere anyone invited me. But I get the sense that if you're an incumbent, there's really almost a motivation to avoid the mic. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you get over that hurdle. Maybe that idea is one, that's a selling point, that these could be your future colleagues and you need mm-hmm. to establish a relationship with them.
Press attendance?
Yeah. Yes, perhaps.
Oh, yeah, negative that press of not attending.
Yeah.
You know.
And or positive press.
Or positive. Yeah,
from
absolutely.
Attending. Yeah. Right. Press opportunities. Mm-hmm. So if we could make sure we have press invited to cover, mm-hmm. then that might be a motivation.
True.
Yeah.
Do you all have observers? Does Bradenton have their own observer?
Lakewood Ranch.
Lakewood Ranch. Yeah.
What's an observer?
Observer for the city meetings or the state? Or
No. We have the Long Coat Observer.
Yes.
Press.
Sarasota oh, the press.
Observer.
Okay.
I think there's an East
yeah, County.
That's the Lakewood Ranch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, but no, I don't think that there is any longer.
But they have the Bradenton newspaper.
Yeah.
Bradenton Herald.
Yep.
And then Anna Maria has two island papers?
Yeah, the Sun.
Sun.
The Islander.
Mm-hmm.
So I think by starting it earlier, we'll be able to advise the media earlier. We'll be able, you know, that was one of the biggest things. The biggest suggestion that I could ever have is we've got to plan this earlier. I really hope it would continue and in that you'll do it again in 2 years. But yes, we need to start planning in January, March, and having everything finalized in March.
Maybe it could be a regular item on the agenda to keep it forefront of the discussion every meeting, you know, because we only meet every, two or three months.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's a regular agenda item, it can stay forefront of the discussion.
Excellent idea. Under old business, keep that.
Yeah.
Because you never know when an idea is going to pop in your head, and then by the time you have the discussion a year from now, you're like, "What was that great idea?" So, all right, I'm not hearing anything else, so we will move on to update from City of Bradenton tour.
Yes, I was very disappointed to have to cancel the tour. It only took me 2 years to like pull it together.
Well, you could have put us all in rowboats.
One of the stops was going to be our brand spanking new, now newly minted Public Safety Operations Center.
Which got used.
It did very much get used. we did have it. You know, I know the stops. We had transportation kind of lined up and an idea of lunch and whatnot. So I am happy to reschedule that. I don't, staff was actually really, they formed a committee of sorts and they were,
nice.
Yes, and they were going to be very helpful and had already started to be very helpful. But right now I feel like they're being pulled in so many different directions that I think it would not really be appreciated if I threw this back at them so soon.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my report is we have it planned out. We know what we want to do. It's just maybe I could report in the new year how they're mm-hmm. feeling about focusing on it again.
Mm-hmm.
I really am looking forward to being able to do it. And I think, and maybe actually when we get to old business and talk a little bit about, or new business and talk about the, or member comments about the storms, I can share a little bit about, or actually, and I would like to pick y'all's brains, about the storm, how it affected the City of Bradenton, the storms, and some thoughts I have on going forward. And so maybe there'll be opportunity in the tour to kind of highlight some things that are now like newly very like nebulous ideas in my head about how to use this as an opportunity versus a disaster.
So we had our Northport tour, not really scheduled, but we were in the planning stages and then Hurricane Ian. So we held ours about 5 months after Ian. And one of the things that I heard from one of the staffers was, it was nice to do something fun.
Right.
You know, it kind of brought back that normalcy back again. So that may also help play into.
That is a good idea.
The removing of that fatigue of, oh my gosh.
Right.
And they were proud to show the things that they have accomplished because of the storm. So don't lose sight of the positivity that the tour can be. Granted, I totally agree. If you do it now, they'll be like, seriously?
Right.
There will come a time when you're going to go, you know, and your city manager might be able to help you, or mayor, I think you also have a mayor, might be able to help you, or just even talking with staff and hearing their comments. And,
yeah. The city administrator was being helpful in this regard, and it was his administrative staff that had kind of, it was his assistant, the clerk, and the policy, and I forget her official title is like five words, but basically the policy kind of coordinator staff person.
Cool.
Yeah, so I'll touch base with them and see about maybe a few months. It'll be a fun thing.
Excellent.
We're looking forward to it. And it's going to be a good tour, I think.
It's going to be fun to show off the this is what happened in Milton and Helene to what it looks like now in the recovery, and also showing how your city is still in the recovery and what needs to be done still.
Yep, that sounds wonderful.
Excellent. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right. And so now we're going to move on to the new business, which is the legislative priorities for Florida League of Cities. Everybody's had an opportunity to take a look at those, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to open up the floor to ideas and suggestions on how you want to do the priorities. I have a feeling that some of the priorities may change, because if you'll remember when we did this after Hurricane Ian, my priorities were very laser focused on the insurance, the recovery, FEMA, the state, all of that kind of stuff. And I have a feeling as you guys go through your recovery, you may have a similar laser focus on what those priorities may look like based on what your constituents are. Because the laws have changed from Ian, thankfully, to what we have in place today. But I promise you, those changes can be improved upon, and new rules. So hopefully your recovery won't be quite as painful with the insurances, but from what I'm hearing so far, that's not the case.
I would have to say that insurance reform has been given every visit, both in Tallahassee and Washington. We get pleasant nods and, oh yeah, things are moving. Nothing has moved forward in insurance reform. And I think we're going to find the outcome from these two storms. We have four people here that are dealing personally with waiting to hear from insurance and FEMA, and I think we'll probably hear a lot of frustration that the system is badly broken.
Yep.
And quite honestly, the good news, I mean, it's not good news, but the good news about that, when we go to Tallahassee in March to lobby on behalf of the League in our cities, all four of us have very compelling personal stories on the insurance nightmares.
Yeah, and if you guys are going through that, magnify that with your citizens. Magnify that for the people that may not have the resources that we have. And it's really, really heartbreaking. And our elected state leaders don't understand because they really don't go through that to the same level that we are. So I think insurance reform is like going to be top on that list, and you'll be able to drill down for some specifics. Mine was the AOB. I'm trying to remember the where you sign off your rights, assignment of benefits. Thank you. Where you sign it off, that has been revised. So I believe it's no longer required anymore. So anyways,
my criticism of the of current attempts to reform in this area are primarily focused on ignoring that while Florida has a higher incident of lawsuits against insurance companies. Florida also has a very related higher incident of denial of claims. And that piece of that puzzle is routinely omitted in the conversation. I also think that there is, I sell, my day job is to be a settlement agent to do title insurance. And in my opinion, this is just my opinion, insurance is insurance. And the way that you comfortably issue insurance is that you mitigate risk. And there's also omitted from the conversation what we are going to do about the fact that there is risk. It's in my mind, my insurance brain, it's really almost a difficult thing for us not to be talking about this because it's so quantifiable. You know, there is a season, there is water, there is wind. It is completely in my mind possible to mitigate this, the risk of, you know, substantial and catastrophic damage. But that's also not part of the conversation. Mm-hmm.
Lisa, you've definitely got to come with us in March.
Absolutely.
Going.
Yeah, and I think your experience on all of this is going to be invaluable. So
I think that you hit the nail on the head when you said that we have compelling stories. And you may be catching me in a moment, but I am desiring to share it. Yeah. I feel almost like a steward of my community, and I feel like and we're going to get to this when we talk about storms, but I have an ability to weather this situation better than a lot of my constituents. And that is, you know, you can't have a spirit of gratitude and not recognize that.
Yeah.
So what do you guys want to do with the legislative priorities? Do you want to go through them? Do you want to start doing a draft? Do you want to postpone until January? So I'm at your will. Go ahead.
So our city, I spoke with our intergovernmental affairs director, Jennifer Jorgensen, just before we left. And she said that because the session starts later this year, we are waiting for an indication from Tallahassee about certain bills that did pass and what it's going to look like for our upcoming session before we do our legislative priorities, which was the reason I was given why ours are not part of anything up to this point. And so that's sort of, I wouldn't mind an indication of what is on the horizon so that we could have more laser focus on our efforts. Especially, you know, these are so important, and, you know, the full preservation of the Sadowski Housing Trust Fund, I mean, we have that every year. It may be good if we could, not in this, but in our dialogue, have real examples of exactly what we mean. For example, last year, there was, you know, this amount, and then this amount got diverted for that. You know, especially since I think those real-world examples help them actually attach meaning to each and every one of these. So I would say that we would probably need to use this as a guide. I would like more time. If you all feel comfortable with adopting these, I'm okay with that as well. But I wouldn't mind just a little bit more time from my city's point of view.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think it's probably worthwhile for us to have some conversation here in terms of what we think is coming down the pike, but I think we can certainly hold off until January to move forward on what our legislative priorities are. And quite honestly, this list is probably a little long. Jen and I have experience, and Jen and I talk pretty fast, but if we can get through three issues while we have someone listening, that's probably remarkable. But some of these are going to change, and one of the interesting things with the storms, the issues about short and long-term rentals and Airbnb soaking up so many available properties, and now people who are homeless not having anything that they can find to move into is certainly going to change the character of what's going on. And we certainly know that the legislature is pretty much bought and paid for by Airbnb and VRBO, but these are the folks that vote for them that right now can't find a place to live. And I think that's going to have a pretty dramatic impact.
Yeah. Agreed. Mm-hmm. So let's table this till January.
Sounds good.
Sounds like you guys are going to be eating your Wheaties before January's meeting. It sounds like it's going to be intense, and it'll be interesting to see what comes of it. All righty. And the election of officers. So that is by requirements. We do this in January when we have a new board. And hopefully everybody will be able to be at that January meeting and elect the new president and vice president, treasurer. We're going to have to really focus on how we're going to be doing that treasurer. And hearing Gail, maybe that's part of what the director does. And that'll be part of that discussion that you guys have in December. So it'll be very helpful to have that December one and have an idea, and don't lose sight of the treasurer role. Go ahead.
Short of outside of losing you and gaining a new Northport commissioner, does the composition change at all? I just don't know.
Yeah, Gail, what's the deal with Jim got reelected, I know, mm-hmm. So he's still current. What about Terry?
As far as the elections,
I don't think Terry was up for re-election this time. So did he just call and say he was not attending today? Okay. Terry.
Oh, yes, he did.
Okay.
Yeah. And the two others did as well. This councilman, Commissioner Short, and Jim Bolt.
Yeah, Jim sent us an email, I think, that we all
Couldn't. He had a conflict, yeah.
Is Commissioner Short, he's from Ann Maria? Is he from, isn't he the mayor now? Got elected mayor.
So that may be a new position. I don't know if he's going to stay on as Minnesota.
I'm
sure Gail will have all that information available to us by January as to the makeup of the board. I know Northport will be submitting who their committee rep is going to be for this board. All right. So that will become old business next time. And now we will go ahead and start with member comments. I have already spoke. Did you want to say anything more? Okay, Ms. Jen?
Yeah, I just have a couple of things. One is for the Florida League of Cities, obviously I missed, as did Member Bishop, the first meeting in October, hurricane, little thing. And the one tomorrow and day after I will also miss. So I've never missed two of these priorities. I've never missed them. I don't think I've ever even missed one, more or less two in a row. So I feel completely useless in my policy committee meetings for utilities, natural resources, and public works. I have no idea what they're talking about. I mean, you know, I should be reading up on the materials, but trying to catch up on work. But I will not be there tomorrow and day after, so I feel badly.
Will. So I'll bring you up to
thank you. Thank you. And I will be at the December one, though. So I'm going to miss that. I miss that terribly. And then we have talked about a mentor program, and right now is about the time to think about doing that for new commissioners as a Minnesota League, for new commissioners that are elected, pairing them with current and or former commissioners from another city so that the new ones can say, hey, wait, how does this work? and you're allowed to talk with that person. We at the City of Sarasota, we have one new person who was elected, and I would love to pair that person with any one of you, or all of you, since you can all talk. So I don't know how we want to officially make that program, how that goes forward, you know, how we onboard people in our own commissions and what that looks like. But I think it's a great idea, and I know that the newly elected people will feel relieved to know that they have somebody they can reach out to and talk to and find out how things are actually done. So I'm open for ideas on how we want to move forward with that.
How about if we send a letter from the Minnesota League? Gail could send a letter from the Minnesota League to everybody who had November elections. Our election's not till March. We try to stay out of the political fray. So, and just say, if you have new commission members, we would like to pair them with experienced commissioners, since the sunshine laws are so draconian. Maybe we won't use that word.
Okay. I'm okay with that word.
So draconian in Florida.
Absolutely. Yeah, that would be good. And then the city would reach out and respond with the newly electeds and, frankly, and anyone, right? Anybody on a sitting commission to pair with another city commissioner, I think, is useful.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess we should ask Gail if that's okay.
Yeah, Gail, come up to the mic so we can hear you.
Say, that is a good idea, but when we get newly elected officials in our cities, what we have done in the past is we send a whole letter to them telling them what we offer, what Florida League of Cities offers, where they can go for information, how they can take training through Florida League of Cities and, you know, get involved with that. We send those letters, we have been for a long time, when we find out the names of people newly elected. So that would be a start, because I always refer them to Florida League of Cities, and I say they have this information here, and, you know, so I don't know whether, I think the last one I said, too, was Commissioner...
Gattinocchi?
Yes. I think I sent you one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I should have everyone, because we started that and we thought it was a good idea to give them a little information. Here's Florida League of Cities, a website. Here's how you contact for this, that, and the other, and these, encouraging them to go to the training sessions that Florida League has, and, you know, just kind of touching base like that. So, did you find that useful?
Yeah, you know what? Having been new all the way around, the first time as a commissioner in the city of Bradenton Beach, and then being a part of this, it kind of was overwhelming because I was getting bombarded with so much paper that to read it all and try and absorb it. I really like the idea of having a one-on-one conversation with someone that you can just say, okay, you know,
is this worthwhile?
Yes.
Is it useful? You know, should I do that, or is this better? Yeah.
I would suggest a separate letter, because I think the letter with everything FLC does, quite honestly, if it's more than three paragraphs, when I first came on board, you're getting hit with so much stuff that I can guarantee you it didn't make it to the top of the pile. Mm. So
maybe each one of us, though, can go back to our commission and say, this is a program that we are Minnesota League is instituting, and then actually speak about it at the table.
Yes.
And then that way, newly electeds or even current commissioners, let your administration know, and you will be paired with somebody from another city that you can reach out to.
Yeah, I like that.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, we tell them about the training that Florida League, and we suggest they get, attend if they can. Tell them that, there's just a wealth of information on the Florida League website as well.
So maybe we will all put our hat in the ring for being somebody else's liaison. So I could be somebody for Northport, and then somebody from the city could contact you know, BJ and somebody from Bradenton could contact Northport or Sarasota or, you know, that way. We could be the point of contact, and then it could work like that.
Yeah. Gail, it might be worthwhile to send an email to Jim and Terry and Brian just saying, we want to put this mentorship program in place and it needs to be sooner than later, mm-hmm. and explain this discussion and asking them to reach out to their newly, not to reach out, but to speak to their commission about getting their newly electeds into a mentoring program with another city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good idea.
If I know our city clerk works very, very closely with the newly electeds. So I don't know how other cities do it, but I don't know if you'd like to include the city clerks in that notification or email or whatever letter it's going to look like. So that way then they will also be, hey, don't forget about this. This is a new program. And it may not be something that they are going to be able to understand right away. But if the clerk sees that a commissioner may be struggling or having questions, hey, did you know? They can then say and give them that little extra push. Mm-hmm. Because I'll be honest, I got my Florida League of Cities welcome packet. It sat on my desk for at least 3 to 4 months because I was just like absolutely overwhelmed. Yeah. With everything that I'm like, and I got to do this too. Oh my gosh. You know, it was very overwhelming. And it was one of those things I wish I had, looking back, I wish I opened first.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't have been so overwhelming. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Well, and that's what we said in our little letter is, you know, well, you're going to be overwhelmed with, you know, well, even people in the media. I remember back in Sarasota days when I worked there, we had a class on dealing with the media, working with the media, mm-hmm. for new employees, or people already on the board for that matter. That was really interesting. That's been a long time ago, but that was, I found very interesting. We had them come in. Angela Christ, I think, came in from Tampa area, and yeah, they planned the whole thing. It was very good, we thought.
Another one of the ideas that I had as maybe part of this, not only the mentor program, but this sort of like onboarding of newly elected officials, is that for the city of Sarasota, so you're elected on a Tuesday, you're sworn in on a Friday. Usually we have our next commission meeting that Monday or the following Monday. So you jump in and you start running. That it might be a good idea because once you're elected on a Tuesday, you're under sunshine right then and there. A lot of folks don't even know it. And so that maybe the league, I don't know how many cities have elections at this cycle or do it in March, May kind of a thing. But elected on a Tuesday and before you're sworn in on that Friday, take the ethics class so that you understand the rules. Because, you know, a lot of times newly elected officials, they don't understand the sunshine laws and they don't understand the gift laws and all of those things that the second you're elected, it hits. And you don't know it. And saying, I didn't know it, and I was only elected for 10 days, and I didn't know I couldn't, it doesn't fly. It just doesn't fly. And so maybe trying to organize with the league between the election and you're sworn in that period, get the class in, get the four-hour class in, get it under your belt so you hit the ground running knowing what the do's and the don'ts are. That was just an idea I had because a lot of folks don't take it until months down the road and get in a lot of trouble in those months.
Yeah, and our clerk told us that we had to do it for this year. So if I was just elected November 5th, I had to fulfill my ethics requirement by December 31st. So that's what we were told. So yeah. My first FLC class, I was there taking my ethics class, and it's like, oh my God.
Yeah. And so I think it's important to know that when you're elected, because you don't know.
Yeah.
And So that was just another suggestion I had had, was to get that class in as soon as possible after you're elected. I mean, I don't know about you all, but we have to go to like an HR thing, and you watch the videos about sexual harassment and all those things, and you have to do it, and it's a couple hours. Throw in a four-hour ethic class, and you get that done, and under your belt, you know what you can and can't do, and especially with, you know, the press, the social media. Oh. Everybody's then on, you know, on social media, maybe somebody, another elected official from your board is congratulating you and you're starting to talk about things. You don't know. Yeah. I mean, I'm making all of that up, obviously, but you wouldn't know as a newly elected. So we want to avoid people getting in trouble.
Right. Good point. Thank you. Is there any?
Oh, yes, I do.
Go for it.
And then I have one other item, which is a certificate of appreciation. Presented this 7th day of November 2024 to Debbie McDowell by the Minnesota League of Cities, Inc., in recognition and appreciation for your dedication, participation, service, and leadership since December 4th, 2020. As a board member, a vice president, and president from December 4th, 2020 until November 11th, 2024. So we thank you from the bottom of our hearts, Debbie.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Gail. Thank you, Miss Gail.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you for doing this and for being a part of all of this. We're going to miss you tremendously.
I am going to miss it. Anything else, ma'am?
That's it. Thank you.
All right. Go ahead, Miss Lisa.
Really, my mind, of course, is on the storms. Like I said, my ward was hit very badly because we front, Ward 4 fronts the Manatee River on the south side of the river. And in my ward alone, I think we had 600 homes flood. I know, it's bad. My ward also happens to be of a 48% is under AMI. So there's also this disparity, I think, in a socioeconomic manner.
Did you say the AMI was?
We're 48% of the population is under it.
Is under 100% of the AMI or 120?
You know, I don't remember actually off the top of my head.
Okay.
I can find out. But yeah,
still a lot.
Right. I mean, I feel like it's a good chunk to say 50%. And I've always kind of said that because the thing about the Ward 4 in particular is. The west half of it is one of the oldest parts of the city of Bradenton, and the east half of it are what I call like the fingers, because it's shaped like that, of several planned unit developments that have everything brand, you know, like new infrastructure, you know, very newer homes, new construction, all that sort of thing. So as from an advocacy and representation standpoint, I really have like not a spectrum, it's like one or the other. Part of those 600 homes were my immediate neighborhood, obviously, which is I live in the older part. And then also I have a historical tiny home kind of community called Braden Castle. And then I also had a mobile home community called Two Rivers. I mean, I have them still. But in particular, Two Rivers is a lot of retirees who did not have insurance on their mobile home structure and are now going to be looking at the 50% rule and how to build back. And so while I don't think that it is my responsibility personally to make sure that every single person has made arrangements for how they're going to rebuild their life, I do think that from a municipal standpoint, that mass displacement is going to be a problem that the city is going to have to contend with at some point. And so I had plans for the redevelopment of the older half that I've been advocating for some time. It's the reason really why I ran. And I felt like I was just starting to even kind of turn the needle when the storms hit. And because of now the issue of, you know, I feel like the consideration is now different because there's so many people that just lost everything. And also, aside outside of the storms, FDOT has lowered I wish Mr. Williams were here to get his thoughts on this, but FDOT has lowered the Bradenton Palmetto Connector project from 10 corridors to 3, one of which, I mean, all of which affect my ward, but one of which in very much in particular affect these areas that were just pretty decimated with the storms. And so I have new thoughts and plans for the area, but they're very ambitious and they require things like forming CRAs and all sorts of lengthy process things. So to the extent that any of you all have thoughts or guidance, I would gladly take them. But that's pretty much what my focus is at this moment, is trying to figure out how I can prepare and advocate step by step for the best way I can see to fund the redevelopment of this area in a way that benefits the entire city, because we are downtown adjacent. So I think that there's a lot of hope there for something that could be kind of transformative for the whole city.
Wow. Lisa, do you serve on MPO?
I do not.
Who does?
Jane Coker. Okay. And the mayor, Jane Brown. I would love to, though.
Yeah.
You can still go to the meetings.
I was thinking, I was starting to jot down like a list of little meetings I'd like to start just observing.
And you can observe them online.
I was just going to say, I think they are online.
Oh, yeah, yep. That's good to know.
And it's probably even better that you do it online.
Right. Yeah,
it probably is. So you're not tempted like I am to sometimes just go across the dial.
Yeah, that was what I was going to ask, because I've only been to two MPO meetings. They are fabulous.
Yeah, they have. I feel like they wield a great deal of influence in projects and how they go forward and how they're funded.
Yeah.
So that's a good idea.
I have no experience with CRAs. We don't have them in our city, but I think if there's anybody that's able to do something new and innovative for your city and your ward that affects, I think you are the perfect person for the job, and I wish you all the best in it, because it does sound like a good route to take with that large of an area that is going to have to get redeveloped. So good luck to you.
Thank you.
Are you guys part of an opportunity zone?
I don't know.
Is that area an opportunity zone in your city? Okay, so there's a question that you might want to double check, because that then also opens up a lot of doors.
Excellent.
And we did have two CRAs. We have one now, and I'm happy to talk to you about that anytime.
Yes, I will appreciate both of that.
I don't know how influential.
I asked you all.
I don't know how influential and how opportunity zones have been working, but they were really, really popular, and then they kind of like faded.
I'm gonna find out.
So, just
good question.
Check it out.
Yeah,
because it opens up mounties.
That would be great. That's what I really need. Like everyone. That's all I've got for now.
Excellent. Ms. Debbie.
So, in kind of going back to the mentor program, when I became a commissioner, it was because the commissioner in my ward had resigned because of the Form 6. And my relationship, and, you know, I've been in the city for many years, and my family was known. And so when I threw my hat in the ring, I went to the meeting where we were, because there was another gentleman, and we were introducing ourselves. So I introduced myself and had a conversation, and then they decided to vote right then and there. And I was sworn in. I was appointed, sworn in. Appointed, sworn in, and put on the dais for that meeting.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, boy.
Yes. So I would truly have benefited tremendously from a mentorship program, as that was like frying pan fire, right? And so coming here, I appreciate all the conversations that we have. I wish, you know, I had an opportunity to get to know you more and so forth. So I value this group tremendously. With that said, our storm, we were devastated. So we lost about 95% of everything. I mean, some of our businesses are finally starting to come around. My constituents consist of 168 trailers in a Sandpiper trailer park, and they've been told there's no rebuilding. That 50% rule. FEMA told us that it doesn't apply to trailer parks because there's a different rule that they have for them when they're that low to the ground, and that if they get over so many inches of water, they're done. And so because all of them got 3 feet, pretty much it's not going their way. And it's heartbreaking to me because I literally am 3 houses away from that trailer park, and I engage with them every day, you know, talk to not every one of them, obviously, but many of the residents, you know, walk our dogs together and so forth. And it's heartbreaking because they are retirees. They've been there for years and years and years, and they didn't have insurance.
Yeah.
And where are they going to go? Because they're priced out. Where are they going to afford to live? Definitely not on the island again.
Where are they now, Debbie?
They're still in their homes because they're fighting.
Wow.
Right? So I think that week where, or the 10 days where nobody could come on the island, no inspectors, they were aggressively demoing and trying to rebuild so that they could stay. Our meeting tonight, we have a meeting tonight, is going to be talking to them, as well as the Pines Trailer Park, which is right off of Bridge Street. Sandpiper is a co-op, so it's a little different. But the Pines Trailer Park is owned by a development co-op, a developer co-op. So they might not have as much opportunity to fight to stay. And talking about the homes on the ground, you know, and some of them just collapsed. The old cracker style frame houses, the roof is now the floor. And their only option is to build up or not. There's no fixing many of these homes. So it's heartbreaking, you know, to have them come in and tell their stories. So I think FEMA, there's so many issues that are not helpful. You go to them expecting help, and then you find out they're just not. I mean, I've already been denied by FEMA and my insurance company. And the interesting thing, the first thing they asked me when I called was, you know, hi, I need to file a claim. Do you have a private adjuster? I'm like, what's a private adjuster? Right? Never heard of it. Well, now everybody's using them because that's the only way they're getting money, is by hiring a private adjuster that comes in and fights and advocates for you, because insurance companies literally are just denying everything. It's just, I even own a business that I lost on Holmes Beach. So I found out that the only way that my business is covered is if the building actually collapsed down onto my appliances and everything. So it's very discouraging and hard, you know, for all of us that have cities that were impacted by both storms. But tonight is our meeting, so I'm going to go forward with the mentorship program. We were working on our legislative priorities the meeting before the storms hit, and so I think you're right. I think some of our priorities might change. I think it's good that it's not till March, because now we can go back and reevaluate those and come back with maybe different ones altogether. But that's kind of my experience. I lost 4 cars. I didn't leave. I will leave every single time now. I assure you, I will never make that mistake twice. And so many people around state, because we're so used to the storms now that we just are like, yeah, whatever, you know, and we don't really consider that it might be our turn this time, because we really have dodged bullets. Like you said, it's been 100 years, and we have dodged that bullet many times. The southern, you know, Port Charlotte and other communities south of us, they not so lucky. Sanibel, for sure. just driving down the streets, driving here to Longboat. Longboat Key was, we were lucky enough that we could even come to Longboat to get our mail. We had to drive around, but at least we were able to get our mail because the Longboat Post Office was facilitating that for us in Bradenton Beach. So I think we all came together very nicely. Thank God. My chief of police, I feel sorry for him. He's also the public works director because our public works director retired or quit and moved.
Oh, God.
And so my chief of police was the acting public works director, really August.
Wow.
And so he's been wearing so many hats, but grateful for him. FDOT right away, they came in. I have to say the state really jumped in quickly to try and get us. We only have sand removal left, and I don't know if any of you gone to Coquina Beach. Have you driven, if you drive by Coquina Beach?
That would be Mount Coquina. Holy cow.
It's like the pyramids and the Sahara Desert is now in Coquina Beach.
And you're going to get some more in December because we're supposed to bring all of ours up to
yes.
you.
Because they're sifting it
yeah.
so they could put it and cleaning it so they could put it back. But I've been on that island 45 years, and this is the first time I could stand at the corner of Golf Drive and 26th Street and actually uninstructed, unobstructed, see the Gulf of Mexico. All the trees are gone. All the foliage is gone. It's just, it's incredible. That's all I have.
If I could offer any advice, see if you guys can focus on picking up the construction debris first.
It's all done. We're done.
Are you guys done?
Yeah.
Are you done? The reason why I had begged after we were at the 30-day mark and we had half of the crew picking up landscape and the half of the crew picking up the construction debris and seeing the aisles of construction debris and people's personal belongings and seeing the vultures.
Ugh.
Human vultures coming
yes.
in and rummaging through for whatever scrap they could find is just so demoralizing. And I remember calling the city manager and I said, can we please get this construction debris picked up as soon as possible? I said, do you know what that will do to everybody's psyche and everybody's morale to have that gone?
Yep.
It removes those poachers, those vultures, and brings a sense of a little bit more security to those hardest hit areas. Thankfully, I don't know if it was just timing, if he heard me, if other people heard and made that same suggestion, I don't know, but the construction debris was picked up relatively much more quickly than it was those first 30 days. I don't know if they opened up another debris site for that gathering. I don't know how it happened, but it was like miraculously within 2 weeks, those were gone. And I think I even said, I dare you to drive down that street and not be choked up. I dare you.
And you know, it's been
so I think seeing it and it kind of helped. So I'm just throwing it out there to focus on that construction debris, the landscape debris, everybody understands. And then you'll be able to pick that up, but get that construction debris picked up.
I can honestly say that's true. One, I was so happy mm-hmm. when I could look, stand on my balcony and look
and not see. Yeah.
The thing that was also interesting is all our white goods, you know, like appliances, mm-hmm. we had Ashbert, and they were going to do two construction, one grass and trees, and one white goods. They never did the white goods because scrappers came through and took every single one. It was insane. The other thing we did is from FEMA, because we only have one building official, you know, and one code enforcement officer. We just got 20 people from FEMA to come in to do our inspections of our buildings because people are trying to go back in ones that are just unsafe to live in. So that's really helping us a lot because it's overwhelming, like you said, when you have that many residences impacted that probably are not habitable. You really need to get those inspections done so that can be handled and taken care of quickly.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing that we have contracts annually for debris removal, preparing, you know, if, quote, we have a hurricane. And one of the things that I think we might want to discuss in Tallahassee in March is we have contracts with those debris removal companies. And when a storm hits, they say, oh, well, we also have a contract with XYZ City and they're paying us 20% more. And then so we have to pay 25% more. It is blackmail of the highest order when you are dealing with an issue of debris and people's homes and lives being torn apart. And then you're out there having to write bigger and bigger checks to get stuff done that you thought you had a legitimate contract to do.
Yeah, we experienced that as well. I know Holmes Beach did. And one vendor told us, well, Disney World called and they're paying us 4 times our normal rate.
Exactly.
So I'm sorry, but we won't be coming there because, you know, the owners of the company want the 4 times more. And that's price gouging.
Yeah.
That the Attorney General really.
And that's exactly. Mm-hmm.
So in the city of Sarasota, I was explaining earlier to President McDowell that between Helene and Milton, St. Armand Circle is, of course, flooded, you know, up to here. And everything, every store, every restaurant, every store was completely inundated and ruined. And so everything had to go outside. All their merchandise, all their displays, all their materials, all their appliances, everything had to go out. And in between the two storms, we also have contracts with, I think, 16 different companies. And we made sure after Ian, we made the mistake of, you know, having a regular price, but not the best price. And that didn't turn out well for us. So since Ian, we've been at the top of the pay scale, and we had none of our contracts bail on us this time. But it was difficult to get everything going between two hurricanes. So we ended up, our deputy city manager saw the danger in on St. Armand's, all of that stuff being outside, ending up in the bay or the street, and the environmental danger that that would cause. So he tasked our staff, get it done. Get that stuff gone. As much as you can between those two, get it gone. And of course, nobody knew what Milton was going to be. We didn't know. Right. But, you know, they were tasked with doing it, which they did successfully achieve that. And so, you know, we did hit the top of the pay scale. So that's recommended. And, you know, you're happy when you actually have them to come by and clean. Our report is of a couple of days ago. We had 235,825 tons of debris picked up, which is 4 times more than Ian. So this storm has, I mean, Milton caused, you know, between Helene and Milton, of course, way more. We also have an interactive map in our city. This helps with the constituents. They've been exceedingly patient. Everybody's damaged. Everybody's tired. Everybody is sad, frustrated. And when you show them the map and say, okay, so you've either had a first pass or you're planned, or like my neighborhood here, not touched yet, not even planned yet. So anybody telling you as an elected official your neighborhood gets hit first, you're wrong. But I get no special treatment, I can tell you that. But this helps people to see. Those folks who've had the first pass, sometimes the trucks will come out and they have the 4 different piles that they're supposed to pick up. Sometimes in the first 3 houses, the truck is full.
There's
nothing you can do about that. You got to take the truck. You've got to dump it somewhere. You know, the county. The county's got to accept it. I mean, there's a whole process here. And so your street may be on there, but it can only pick up 3 houses or 4 houses. So that first pass has happened, but it's going to come back. And the R clause, and it's not a neat pickup like your city staff do it, right? So, you know, at least the folks have a map. They can see it. They know that they're not being ignored, that there's a plan in place. And I think it helps a little bit to have that interactive map. So
something as simple as when the neighbors see the claw truck coming, everybody's all excited, and then they're like, to Jen's point, they picked up three houses and then they left, and it's like, what about mine? Why aren't you picking up mine? And they don't see inside is all full and they got to go dump. Mm-hmm. And then the phone calls come and they were here, but they didn't pick up mine. And it's just horrendous. So I think communication is absolutely paramount. Even those little things that we understand, they don't. Right. And that is the biggest thing, is just explaining those little nuances. Hey, they're coming. Don't worry. They had to go dump. They'll come back. I promise.
You know what else was interesting? And you would think it's logical. Don't put the debris by your mailbox.
Yes.
Because they will take your mailbox. Because they don't understand, because you piled debris all around it and on top of it, that it's not debris. So we had so many people calling, complaining because their mailboxes were taking, and you know, one of my properties, because I have a annual rental, that's what happened. And I said, I'll replace the mailbox, but why did you put all your stuff around a mailbox when you know it's this giant, massive claw truck coming?
Right. One other thing, too. So this is really important, I think. And I didn't know this until my house flooded and we had to have the remediation come in and take out the walls and the doors and the floors and the appliances and the cabinets and all those things. And as the remediation company, which came from Alabama, right, you take what, you know, what's going to do the job, and they're dumping everything. We had already, after Helene, immediately the next day you wake up and what is the first thing you do is you clear your driveway, clear your yard. So we had vegetative debris, a big pile. Well, the remediation company started throwing construction stuff on top of that. And I had to explain to them, you can't do that. I had to explain to them, don't put construction debris in plastic bags, because FEMA doesn't know it's construction debris. If it's in a dark plastic bag, they can't see what's inside and they won't take it. All of those little rules. So they're a national company, or, you know, and maybe the city of Sarasota's rules are different than somebody else's rules, or our contract is different than somebody else's contract. To get the word out about your requirements, either the states, the municipality, the counties, requirements to those remediation companies is really important, because we have, so our house, we're not on there yet. We're not even planning to be on there yet, but I keep calling them and saying, can you please come back out? Because they said that they would, and they didn't know that they would take everything out and make their own new pile, because they won't touch our stuff the way it is now with everything all mixed up. But they said, I wish we would have known this, you know? And so I only knew that because I'm an elected official and have been telling people ad nauseum, there are the four piles, please separate it, they won't take it. It's the only reason I knew, otherwise how would you know, you know? And so they don't know. So maybe the companies that are actually doing the remediation, in those contracts, it's stated you will make yourself aware of the requirements for remediation, or, you know, whatever we, when in any interfacing the city has with those kinds of companies, if there's any oversight we can have, I don't know if we can or can't, but if we can communicate to them, that may help all those houses that they service.
Our solid waste department put out a separation guide, and it had, not a guide, like a book, but just a little poster. Your whites, your
Landscape,
your construction debris, and
bulk
pickup stuff. So that way then they had all those four different piles, and it was illustrated. They put it up on the website. They shared it on social media. So it helped.
But I can tell you, as somebody who had to clean out a flooded, disgusting house, mm-hmm. In 155 degree weather, you don't care.
Yeah,
it's smelly, it's wet, you're tired, it's hot,
it's all garbage.
Your house has been destroyed, it's all garbage. Yeah. Oh, wait, no, that furniture does not go there. It goes, you know, not with the walls and the appliances, it goes in a separate pile. And then you don't have piles. You don't have enough room for piles. You don't have enough frontage for piles. I mean, it's, you know, the reality is, it is so devastating that really thinking about four piles is...
Not forefront for you or the remediation company. So there's a big conversation to be had there as well, I think.
We had a really horrible experience with our personal remediation company. And I think that might be something to kick in the back of our heads as far as legislative priorities. But, at the end of the day, you are so shell-shocked. I mean, my husband and I both we're both professional people. And we walked around that first weekend completely. We both later said to ourselves, we both knew we were supposed to be doing something, but we couldn't tell you what it was. And mm-hmm. they swoop in, mm-hmm. and I'll tell you the personal story offline, but needless to say, I feel like ultimately I have this amazing network of friends that helped me before I could even get a remediation company. And I felt like we were in such a good spot until they showed up. And then they actually wound up doing more damage than actually helping in many ways, and wound up costing us money, I think. And I think it was because they wanted to deal with, at the end of the day, they showed us, we demanded a quote, because it looked to us like they were just doing demo. They were not, in fact, remediating. And the quote for us, direct pay, was something like $9,000, but through insurance was going to be something close to $30,000. So there, the discrepancy there, like to the point of insurance reform, how is it that if I am able to write a check, they're going to take a third of what my insurance, and that comes out of my benefits. Yeah, I feel like that's wow. predatory almost. I mean, mm-hmm. at least that's the way we found. Thank yeah. God we were, again, just had the experience to, that's what my husband does for a living, to negotiate them out of our lives. But I can only imagine for someone else that they swoop in and actually cause more problems.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of that. As soon as traffic was allowed back on Braden and Beach, it was just a parade of restoration, remediation companies, and all you heard was horror stories about people being taken advantage of. A 98-year-old woman in this tiny little 800-square-foot house was charged $23,000 for demo.
Oh, my gosh.
How big her house?
800 square feet. He charged her $23,000. To demo it.
We had a great experience with our remediation company that I can share with you later.
Okay, we can talk about that.
A good experience.
We got about a minute. So I know that we could talk and talk all about this, and we have lots of stories that we can share. So let's take it offline. I think we have some really good ideas that we shared already. Please just reach out to any one of us and kind of bend our ears. That's what we're here for. So if there's nothing else, our next meeting is scheduled tentatively for December 12th at 9:30, and then we have another another meeting on January 9th at 9:30. Gail, the January 9th meeting is going to be here.
Uh-huh.
Okay, just making sure of the location. So with that all said, it is exactly 11:30, yes, and we are going to be adjourned. And thank you again for everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.